locomotive, sipping, drinking Arizona. Mixtape just around the corner. Did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like Songa, man, my song's gon' break through like...
Hello, welcome back. It is Sunday, October 2nd. Mark Daly and Tim Perrani here for another Scootery F1 TSN Racing Pod post-race mashup show. Welcome to one and all on what is a very sunny and warm Sunday afternoon here on the beautiful west coast of Canada. Harani, how's it going?
Buddy, it's dark and cold here.
Well, 5 or 3 hour time difference, so we're basking in the sun on the west coast.
It's like, it's nice. Lovely. It's beautiful and sunny here on the west coast. Yeah, it's not like that on in Ontario.
I know. I've been seeing that, like, on my Environment Canada weather app. I keep getting these notifications from when I had everything installed from when I was in Ontario about a month ago. It's like frost warning, cold weather warning, and here I am. I walk around in shorts and t-shirt because summer has been prolonged for a little while longer. But yeah, we're back. It seems like it's been a long time since the last race, and you know, it's been funny because, you know, we've had like this sort of artificial long race because, of course, the Russian Grand Prix at Sochi was canceled, so we had an extra weekend in between there. But boy, were we treated to quite an action-packed weekend at Singapore. First race there in 3 years because of the pandemic. And this is one of the races I always find from a viewer's point of view. It's a real grind to get through because you're going to see safety cars. You know that even in the best conditions, you're going to kind of come up pretty close against that 2 hour time limit. And well, without getting ahead of ourselves today, there was a lot of drama all weekend long. It didn't rain during qualifying or the race, but the tracks were wet because it rained just before, and it really made for an action-packed weekend. So where do we want to start first of all? I know there's plenty of news kind of going around Formula One. So why don't we just start with quali? We'll go from there. Then we'll unpack some of the stuff with the cost cap a little bit afterwards. So the big news of the day is Max Verstappen hasn't clinched the world championship just yet. It's not a question of if, but obviously when. So he has now 104-point lead over Charles Leclerc from Ferrari. He can become world champion again in Japan, but he needs his lead to be 112 points. And, you know, it's funny, just to sort of put the cart before the horse here, that towards the end of the race there, you had Sebastian Vettel, Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen, all running like in order. I was thinking, geez, three cars, 12 world championships between the three of them. This is awesome. It was quite exciting racing. Anyway, so that is the big story of the day is Max hasn't clinched just quite yet. And going back to qualification, it was anticlimactic and frustrating if you weren't Max Verstappen, but it was a bit surprising because he did get to put in that last hot lap, and you know, because they didn't leave enough fuel in the car, Max ends up qualifying in eighth on row four. That was a bit shocking. You had a front row of Charles Leclerc, Sergio Perez, Lewis Hamilton, and Carlos Sainz. Row two, Fernando Alonso, in his 350th Grand Prix, fifth for Alpine. Lando for McLaren qualifying sixth, another solid qualifying from him. Pierre Gasly and AlphaTauri qualifying seventh. As I said, Max eighth. K-Mag for Haas, and then Yuki Tsunoda in the second AlphaTauri, rounding out the top 10. Obviously, the big story there is Max not qualifying higher than he did. Tim, why don't you just break down what was obviously a bit of a bizarre scenario from a team like Red Bull, usually gets these, they're the leader. Like, let's face it, they're usually spot on when it comes to this sort of stuff and any sort of strategies and tactics. So that was a big thing for me.
Yeah, I usually expect them to be on the sharper side of these things, Daly, because for the most part, we haven't really seen them make many errors so far this season, especially, you know, strategically that way and technically as well at the same time. I mean, obviously they did have, have some issues at the start of the season in terms of reliability, but in terms of like everything that happens on the pit wall and in the garage, they've been solid all the way around. It was just, I think everyone was just as shocked as Verstappen was when he got that radio call. And funny enough, they don't really even talk about it over the radio, simply telling him what actually was going on. Like, hey, you don't have enough fuel here, so if you complete this lap that you're on, we're going to get a penalty because there's not going to be enough fuel to test. So unreal. I think Yeah, just a calamity of errors on that front. And I think like everything that's happening with the cost cap row happening off track as well, you know, that kind of filters into the team as at the same time. And I think there's been a lot going on for them off track heading into the weekend. But yeah, I was as surprised as Max was when he got that radio message. But who knows if he actually would have gotten pole if he finished the lap, because he was down in the first sector, and the Red Bull wasn't as strong as the Ferrari was in the third sector. So I don't know necessarily think he would have gotten pole, but obviously he would have qualified higher than what, eighth?
Yeah, 100%. And sort of just a general comment about Max in general all weekend long. I mean, he's really been strong in the wet all throughout his career. So it was very strange to see him sort of struggling and then at times looking a little bit faster. It was obvious that the car just wasn't working the way that he liked, because you usually expect to see Max cutting through the pack in the wet if he's not out front like a hot knife going through butter. I mean, he usually is really, really good. So that was something that really, really stood out for me. You know, the bizarreness of that fuel situation and qualification, yeah, you know, notwithstanding, right?
Yeah, the track is also really tough to pass on, right? I mean, that's why they added that third DRS zone. But at the same time, I mean, and factor in the conditions on top of all of that, because on a damp track, it's very difficult to pass somebody. But on a track that's, you know, completely wet, that's a different story. And then obviously you have a track that's completely dry. Again, that's a different story. But when you have those really tricky conditions where you have a bit of a dry line appearing, but then you still have damp sections, you can't really necessarily leave that dry line. Even if you are on the intermediate tire, it's still quite difficult to pull off a move. So I'm actually quite surprised at how high Max actually got during this race, to be perfectly honest with you, because it looked really tough to pass. I mean, even looking at Charles Leclerc, he was throwing everything at Sergio Perez with the, you know, kitchen sink, and he was still not able to get by him. And obviously we'll get into that a little bit later, but yeah, I wasn't too surprised by how difficult it was to pass out there.
Tim, I just want to get your point of view as a driver. What is it like when you're out in conditions like that, regardless if you're on full wets or inters or slicks? Mm-hmm. I mean, we see it that there, whenever you have like a wet track like that, you see the dry line developing. There's always somebody that decides to take the plunge first of all. Today, it was George Russell during the race. And then you see, I always liken it to walking out onto a skating rink wearing your sneakers because you're kind of sliding all over the place. But just in general, regardless if it was in qualifying yesterday on Saturday or the race today on Sunday, what is it? What's the car like underneath you in those conditions? Like, regardless if it's wet or drying, I mean, if the conditions are changing, just makes it that much more difficult, I imagine.
Yeah, just trying to, you know, think about driving your car on like a skating rink or a hockey rink or something that's really slick. You know, that's the feeling that it feels like underneath you. It's just, you can feel that there's no grip. The car slides around a lot. And from the dry line to the damp line, that's where you run into, hey, I'm faster than the guy in front of me, I think I might as well try this. And then you try it and you're like, that's not going to work. And then you sail off into the distance. So it's difficult to judge because, you know, you obviously are being aggressive at the same time and you need to get position. But sometimes you have to pick and choose when that right opportunity is. And sometimes you just can't do it. And you just got to sit at bay until things start to dry up a little bit. I always find that, you know, we'll use Q1 as a perfect example, because the track at that point, it just finished raining and the track was drying, but there were other sections of the racetrack that were, I don't want to call it wet, but greasy. And that is actually really hard to drive on. I mean, if it's full wet, then obviously, you know, the wet tires, they do so much. I mean, they expel liters and liters and liters of water every second. And so having something like that at your disposal is a, you know, a huge benefit. But having that intermediate tire on something that's really greasy doesn't really work out essentially well, because there's not a lot of water that the tire's actually having to remove at the same time. So it's really difficult to drive on, and it's very, very slick and slippery, and it's really hard to judge sometimes too. I mean, like, you could see some of the drivers, especially when they went to slap on the slicks. I mean, like, Lance did it in Q2, and he had a great lap going. I mean, he was a second up from his previous best. That would have put him into Q3 no problem. But just getting it offline just slightly and just leaving the braking just a touch too late. And again, like I was saying, just this greasy sort of pavement, that was enough for it to just ruin his lap in sector three and him costing him moving on to Q3. So it's so tough sometimes to judge as a driver when you're out there on those kinds of conditions daily.
When you switch the slick tires, how difficult it is when the conditions are wet like that to generate the heat? Because it was funny because we watched George, like, eventually he starts setting purple sectors during the race, right?
But it took a while. Like, it took a really big heat cycle to get the tire up to temperature. So, like, one of the interesting things was, and, you know, we're obviously flipping back and forth between qualifying and race, but for the race, and using George Russell
similar
as an example,
conditions, right?
Yeah, it's basically, you know, what's the tire pressure going to be like? And if it's at a certain range, okay, well, how many laps does it take for it to come into a window where it's going to start working? And then on top of that, you know, how many laps do you have to, you know, really be very uncomfortable with, like, hey, this thing's going to go in the wall here at any moment. And, like, I don't want to crash, but you guys are making me stay out here like this. So that is difficult to judge on how fast the track is going to dry, because Mercedes seemed to think that it was going to dry, which it didn't for quite a while. But once it did, the tire and track, it was quite interesting because the tire and track actually met at that exact moment. And that's when you started to see George starting to, like, carve into the gap ahead and set purple sectors and all that kind of stuff. So it is very difficult to judge, especially with the Pirelli compound, like how much, what's the PSI level going to be for it? Because you don't know how long it's going to take to get into the window.
Yeah, I do want to come back to this tire situation in a minute when we start talk about the start of the race, especially. Excuse me. But for the moment, I just want to go back and just wrap up qualifying, see if there are any other names that stood out for you, either for good reasons and bad reasons, and then we'll move on. Impressed to see Fernando qualify where he did. K-Mag, obviously qualifying in P9. And then Danny Ricciardo not making it out of Q1 again. So that was a bit of a surprise, you know, a couple of surprises for me. What about yourself, Tim?
For Danny Rick, like, one of the things is obviously he wasn't running the big upgrade that McLaren had brought this weekend. So Lando Norris was the one who got the big upgrade. And, you know, hearing from Ricciardo on Thursday, he was like, yeah, cool. You know, I get it. I know why I'm not getting the upgrade. And I know Lando's getting the upgrade. So, like, he was pretty cool about it. But at the same time, you know, as a driver, you're kind of upset about that because, you know, you want equal playing field. But the team, hearing from Andreas Seidel today, he told us that, yes, Ricciardo will be getting the upgrade in Japan. Aside from that, though, not having that upgrade, I think it did cost him a little bit. But again, I think also track position. When was the track starting to dry? And I think he was one of those drivers that just sort of got caught out by it, because there were a couple, right? So, tough one for Danny Rick, man. But, like, hey, we'll get to him in the race, right?
Oh, exactly. I mean, his race is one that turned out pretty good, as it did for several other guys.
Yeah, for sure.
That I kind of was, like, wondering about how it's going to turn out for them on Sunday. Okay, well, let's get into the race itself. Again, it apparently rained buckets and buckets about 60 to 70 minutes before the start of the Grand Prix. And it was interesting, too, because as you saw, like, on the formation lap, it certainly looked like the rain had really hit parts of the track harder than it did the others. I mean, obviously, it was all wet to some degree over the entirety of the course. But especially around on the back, it seemed like there was a lot of standing water, some really big puddles. Whereas by start finish, it just looked like it was wet. It was a damp. And I just kind of got the feeling that, okay, once this gets going, once these cars get around on it, we're probably going to see the dry line on the, you know, starting on the side by start finish first rather than on the backside of the track. And that's exactly how it turned out. But right off of the start, the two guys that really... you know, had a bit of a tough start was Charles Leclerc, who qualified on pole, didn't get a good start off the line and gets beaten to the first turn by Sergio Perez. And, you know, it's kind of funny, but it's just the way they kind of followed each other around for the next, well, I would say 61 laps. We didn't quite get there, of course. But then Max going into the anti-stall there and losing, what was it, four positions right on the first lap there. That was very un-Max Verstappen-like.
Oh, yeah, big time. I mean, I can't believe, I'm trying to think like the last time I saw Max like hit the anti-stall on a start, because he's been really, I want to say, he's been dynamite on the starts this season. And last season, he was really good. There were a couple, I think, that Lewis got him on. I can't remember which races exactly in 2021. It's kind of a blur, but...
for obvious reasons.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think for him, a frustrating moment. Doing well, though, to carve his way back. And I think for Max, it's kind of like he has everything to sort of lose, but at the same time, he does a great job of just keeping his head, because we've seen in the past where when Max sort of gets frustrated, or I don't want to say stressed, but when things aren't going his way, he tends to make some rash decisions. Mm-hmm. And this speaks a lot, I think, to the maturity of Verstappen this season that I have alluded to on, you know, prior podcasts. He has done a great job of keeping that emotion like under control. When you're in the race car, like there is a lot of emotion, like a ton of it. And you have to do everything you can to manage not only your stress, your emotion, you're obviously managing the race car, you're managing the engine, you're managing the tire. There's so much management going on, right? It's sometimes can get quite difficult. But, you know, I take my hat off to Max, because I think, you know, he did a really good job of just keeping his composure and getting himself back into the race.
Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, too, with Charles getting a poor start. That also impacted the start of Lewis Hamilton, who qualified third. So he lined up behind Charles on the grid. And that opened the door to Carlos Sainz. And there was a little bit of pushing and shoving between Carlos and Lewis going into those first couple of corners. Lewis kind of goes off onto the paved runoff area there. I didn't see anything that wrong with that. I thought it was just two guys. It was at the start. The track was a little bit greasy. So I know that the stewards noted it and then said that no further investigation was necessary. And I thought that was perfectly okay. But what I wanted to talk about was with Lewis. And I thought it was interesting that after a couple laps into the race, Lewis is on his comms. He's talking to his race engineer, Peter Bonington. And he's basically saying, Bono, you know, you guys made the wrong choice with the tires. We should have gone with what I wanted. You guys need to listen to me on this. So apparently, Lewis wanted to go with the full wets, which would have been completely contrary to the other 19 cars on the grid. What's your thoughts on that, Tim? Was that the right call to make, or was that too risky? Because, you know, if one or two other guys maybe were doing it, sure. But even if you're Lewis, that just seems...
Yeah, it's kind of one of those...
The wrong choice, right?
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things that I was saying, right? When you're in the car and sometimes the emotions sort of get the better of you. I think for Lewis, I mean, would that wet weather tire have helped him? Full wets and that, those conditions, I mean, maybe for a couple laps, but they would have just degraded so fast because there wasn't enough standing water. I mean, at the same time, like you look at when they were running the intermediate tire, you saw them like by lap five, like searching for puddles to cool the tire so it would stop eating itself, essentially. Yeah. I don't necessarily, like, I kind of disagree with that in terms of running that wet weather tire, because I think that thing would have been toast by like lap seven, maybe. Like, I don't think it would have had much life to it. And I think the team set him up in the best way possible where it was like, hey, this is what we got. And everyone else in the entire grid was doing the exact same thing. Now, look how long it took before they pit, right? It took
The other thing, right? Yeah, yeah. Well, the interesting thing about that is I can't remember. I don't have it in front of me here, but when Charles finally came in for his pit stop, I mean, there was nothing left on that right front tire. There was very little tread on it compared to the left front.
Yeah, but, and that's the other thing. That's the other thing, though. Sorry to cut you off, Daly. That's the other thing about that intermediate tire. I mean, if we remember, I believe it was 2020, Turkey. Lewis wore that. I believe it was the intermediate tire he was on, but he wore that thing down to a slick, mm-hmm. and they just left him out on it. And he finished the race on it as well. I think if memory serves.
Yeah, yeah.
And it held up too. Like, and that was one of the things. And with this intermediate tire, you had a similar scenario happening where the track was drying and you had the intermediate tire. But as the track is drying, the intermediate, yes, it's losing the tread, but it's still keeping the grip, mm-hmm. right? And it's kind of like, okay, well, now you gotta understand why Mercedes did what they did, right? That's why that's why his message may, you know, I don't know if he was really thinking it through 100% at that point during the race. I mean, it's pretty hard. He's got a lot to manage, like I had mentioned previously, but sure. I think the team just set him up the best way they could. And I think at some points he was in line for like a podium at some points.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
He could have been. I mean, there will be an incident that we'll get to in just a few minutes here, but I just wanted to talk about Fernando because I thought it was interesting because you get this interesting combination of wet track that is drying at night under the lights. And I remember him getting on the radio, talking to the engineer back on the pit wall or back in the garage saying, hey, do you guys see like a dry line developing? You know, basically I'm sort of parsing here. It's like, do you see a dry line developing? Because I can't tell here. So, I mean, it's dark, even with like the big floodlights there, but he still can't tell. He's just, you know, what the condition of the track like is right in front of him. I thought that was a really, really bit of insightful commentary out of the cockpit from Fernando Alonso.
Yeah. If you're Carlos Sainz, I guess it's a different story. He thought slicks were coming sooner. So,
yeah, I mean, he said that very early, didn't he?
Yeah. I was quite surprised, really. Yeah. Shocked actually that he said it because everybody else who I was following, they were all saying the complete opposite to what he was saying. So,
yep.
Fernando Alonso is an absolute animal. And this guy does not look like he is slowing down one bit.
He's a bit of a freak of nature, right?
Yes. And Aston Martin are getting themselves probably the best Fernando Alonso I think I've ever seen because he just has command of that race car. And this season and last season as well, he just looks incredible, man. Like I can't believe his age, like factor in, you know, what this guy has to go through, you know, all the travel as well. Add on top of that, as you get older, it doesn't get easier. So
yep.
Trust me, same with the training, trust me on that one as well. It just doesn't get easier. It's like, you need more rest and you need more like good food and all this other kind of stuff. But he has just done such an incredible job. And it sucks the way that this race weekend ended for him, obviously being his 350th Grand Prix. You know, that kind of sucks the way it ended. But at the same time, he put himself in such a really good position to score some, you know, solid points, Daly.
Oh, absolutely. Excuse me. Now we get into the part of the race where it starts to get interesting, right? Because Fernando, like you say, in his 350th race, they threw up all those stats, most races raced, most laps raced, all these impressive stats for a guy that's been in the sport for two decades. But it didn't end that way for him. He's just one of what, about half a dozen cars that didn't finish the race in the end, started very early. And the reputation that this track has is it has had a safety car every single time that they've raced here. Wow. So this year wasn't any different than any other race, but it started really quickly because on lap six, Nicka Latifi and Zhou Guan Yu had a coming together. Well, Nicky kind of drove into him and then broke Joe's right front steering arm, and then that put him out of the race. Then Nicky retired a lap later. And that was just like the first of a series of, what do we have? Two virtual safety cars, if memory serves correct. Fernando himself, he retires on lap 20 when his engine let go, which was really disappointing because he was looking pretty racy there. And I thought it was really interesting because you had that start of the race. You had Max lose the four spots off of the start there. He kind of gets into his groove. He's climbing back up. He gets right up behind Fernando, who was running, was at sixth or seventh, something like at that point. And he's keeping Max behind him for quite a bit. And then all of a sudden, there you see Fernando getting out of the car. It's just like, well, what happened? And then a couple laps later, you have Alex Albon go out of the race. And then Esteban Ocon, his teammate, he retires about half a dozen laps after Fernando. His engine lets go. Eventually, Yuki Tsunoda crashes on lap 34. And it's funny because I texted you and Hammy sort of halfway through the race because I watched it after I got back from my bike ride this morning. I felt like I'd been sitting down half the morning watching this race. And then I go and look at the lap counter on the screen. I'm like, oh my God, we're only on lap 37 here. It just kept like going on and on and on. But those safety cars, it kind of made it interesting as well. But, you know, for a track where we see a lot of them, or we see it all the time, it was more than it was than usual. It was really quite something.
Yeah, big time. I mean, just it felt like at some points there was a bit of a lull, right? And then you had like some chaos. And then it's one of those things, right, where it's cautions breed more cautions. That's exactly what ended up happening. I kind of wish they had started this, you know, the race a little bit more when it was wetter. I do understand, you know, yes, safety plays a role in a lot of things, and I get it. And yes, you know, I get it. It's also a street track, and it's harder for them to race in massive downpours like that on street tracks. It's different when you get to like road courses where it's, you know, the track is literally built to have water, you know, run off and not cool up, whereas city streets is a little different. You get a lot of standing water. You get a lot of aquaplaning because of that. So I do get that, but at the same time, it would have really spiced it up. Like it would have been really spicy off the top for sure. And I'm not talking about crashes. I'm talking about like good hard racing, good passing, all that kind of stuff. Seeing these world-class drivers, you know, wrestling these Formula One cars around city streets of Singapore, right, in a downpour would have been cool to see. But, I mean, hey, look, I get it. But at the same time, I mean, once it got into this battle between, you know, Leclerc and Perez, that was awesome, man. Mm-hmm. That was – those two guys were proper racing for the lead. I was on – Leclerc's onboard camera for that whole scenario, and there had to have been at least a few times every single lap during that chase that Leclerc almost put it into the wall. Just incredible car control on the limit the whole way, both of them sliding all crossed up. It was great. It was so great. And a shame that Leclerc had to, you know, he made that mistake that he had made. That allowed Perez to open the gap and kind of kept it there. He did a great job of keeping it there as well. And the amount of pressure that Leclerc was putting on him during that stint was incredible. He's putting a ton of pressure on Sergio Perez, and Sergio did a great job not to make any mistakes and let Leclerc go by. But that battle itself, Daly, it was awesome for me to watch. I loved every minute of that.
It was amazing. I mean, the way, like you say, that these guys were really just controlling the cars in those difficult conditions. I mean, we saw Lewis Hamilton go off and put it into the Tech Pro Barry. We saw George Russell. We saw Max Verstappen. We saw so many guys, run off into the escape roads or go into the Tech Pro barriers around the course. And these guys were just in a bit of a class of their own today. I mean, I was thinking to myself that after, watching this race, it was just like, if there were any lingering doubts about Sergio Perez having a drive at Red Bull, I think that anybody that has those questions now can firmly strike those off their list. Because to me, I mean, he just proved beyond all reason today that he deserves to be racing with that team in the best car in Formula One without question at this point in time. There's no more doubt for me.
Yeah, 100%. I had mentioned it on my podcast on Thursday that it was a little concerning with just how far off the pace, Sergio had been of Max. And yes, I understand that, Max was getting a lot of the good components, but the car itself was being tuned away from Sergio's driving style. And I think if Sergio had of shown a stronger hand during this first half of the season, that probably might not have happened, because you would have been talking about Sergio Perez in the championship lead and not Max Verstappen. Because when we got to the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-ish races, I mean, that was a car that was still geared towards Sergio's driving style. It was still heavy and still created a lot of understeer, which is kind of in his wheelhouse. And Max, again, kudos, he still did a great job of like driving a car that doesn't suit his style and still making it work for him. And I think if Sergio just had have been a little more, like I said, a little more assertive in that role, then, who knows, right? It may not have gone downhill for him. But this race on Sunday for Sergio Perez is an incredible victory for him. I think he needed it for his confidence. He needed to show the team that he could still win, that he was a winner. And I think, for him, it just shut a lot of people up, like just about him and his driving and if he belongs in Formula One or not.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Now, there's a couple more angles to this win for Sergio that I want to get to. First of all, sort of towards the end of the race here, comes over that he's being investigated for a safety car infringement, and then he's facing a possible penalty. We don't know what it's going to be, because the thing is, he's under investigation, then comes back, will be investigated after the race. And then, because of that, he's getting the order from the pit wall, speed up, open that gap to 5+ seconds between himself and Charles Leclerc, so that if he does have, end up with this 5-second penalty, which seemed the most likely scenario, should he be found guilty of this infringement, that he could still keep that victory. So that's ultimately what happened, long story short. But the second part to this story is, he managed to open up that gap on Charles. But I was astounded. He was hovering in about like 3 seconds. And then all of a sudden, he just disappeared down the road there. He was like, Charles became like a dot in his mirrors. I mean, at one point, I think he opened up about 1.2, 1.3 seconds on him in one lap alone. And that was just looking at the lap times, the gap between them just on the on-screen timer. So first of all, let's unpack that a little bit. First of all, Tim, just explain what was going on with the safety car infringement, and then we'll just talk about the way that he just put the hammer down and just buried Charles to make sure there was going to be any question about what was going to happen should he be found guilty. So let's start with the penalty.
So the race director actually issued a warning to Perez, to the team, and then the team relayed that message to Perez that he wasn't keeping within the 10 car lengths regulation between turns 9 and 10. So the team passed on that warning to him. And then later in the safety car, he was found to have done it again, and he didn't adhere to the 10 car lengths of the safety car between turns 13 and 14. So he'd already been given a warning once. And so the second time that was where, okay, he got penalized, 5-second time penalty. I know Mattia Binotto was looking for a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been, he was looking, I think, 2 back-to-back because of what had happened at turns 9 and 10. And then again,
so,
later.
Excuse me. So he was like, Binotto was looking for the, like, a penalty where he got like a warning. So basically doubling up on that plus the second one. Is that just for a little bit of clarification there?
From what I can understand from it, I think that's what Mattia Binotto was looking for. He was looking for 2 5-second
Fair
time
enough.
Penalties because of the 2 separate incidents. Now, for this issue to come out as late as it did, I think it came out around 1:42 a.m. Singapore time. The race has been over for, well over an hour for them to make the decision. And David Croft actually posted a tweet about it saying, like, hey, you know, like, here's what happened. You know, Sergio got a 5-second time penalty, but it's also come and the race has been over for well over an hour. And I think for some folks, they would like to try and see this get solved sooner, some of these, you know, penalties.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they make a good point because I think having something like this hang over a race is not a good thing. And the races, the winners, it all should be decided, I feel, in the moment, as best as possible. I do understand that the FIA and the race directors, they have a big job to do, and I do get it. Like, I get that. And they have a lot of stuff coming at them. But at the same time, I think they need to figure out how to try and make sure that these types of scenarios don't happen very often. Because, you know, the fans are there to see who won the race. And then, like, they're going to go home 90 minutes later or whatever. And let's say that Sergio got hit with a 10-second penalty, right? You're going to, you know, mm-hmm. fans go out, they go to the bar, whatever. They're having a good time. Their hero won. And they get home. And next thing you know, they go, what? Sergio de Perez didn't win the Singapore Grand Prix? Like,
yeah.
How did that happen? Yeah. I saw him cross the start-finish line. Like, so it's stuff like that, right? And I think, like, if you can just find a way of getting that cleared up sooner, that would be a good thing moving forward. But yes, you know, I do understand that it is quite difficult to issue these penalties as fast and as thoroughly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he dropped the hammer as soon as, you know, Leclerc made a mistake. And that was enough for Sergio to just pull. It was about a 1.1 or 1.5 second gap to Leclerc. And I think it was at that moment that Ferrari was telling, you know, Charles, like, hey, like, you can't let this guy get 5 seconds up the road on you because he could have a penalty here.
And yeah.
I don't think Leclerc didn't have too much tire left. Where the Red Bull's actually been, and like we've been talking about all season, right? The Red Bull's been great on the race tire. They've always been fantastic this season. And Sergio just had enough tire left just to, like, keep pushing, keep opening that gap. And he did such a great job of not making a mistake and pushing. And people will wonder, well, why didn't he do that when him and Charles were in that heated little battle? It's kind of like, because he was too busy looking in his mirrors, right? Trying not to make a mistake, trying, you know, to keep Leclerc behind him. And so that's why, you know, a lot of us at the end of this race sat there and were just like, what a great job that Perez did. You know, you have to take your hat off to him because, yeah, he was incredible. He was incredible on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, let's not forget that at least 50%, if not more, of this race was run without DRS enabled, right?
Yeah.
So as soon as they started to, you know, as soon as they switched over to slicks, and then it was just a question of if and not when they were going to enable DRS. And then once they did, I mean, Charles, he was like a quarter of a second, like 0.3 of a second behind.
Still.
Behind Sergio. And it was amazing just like how close he was at times there. But it was just something else there when he got that sort of 3-second lead, when he knew that that this penalty is probably going to come. And sort of this is just me kind of reading between the lines here. I think that maybe why it took so long was, yes, he was going to get a penalty, but I guess they were debating, is he going to get 1 or 2 penalties here? But regardless, I mean, he just completely disappeared from Leclerc there. And of course, like, maybe, like you say, like, Charles's tires were going off, but that was really, really impressive to make sure that Sergio had that, you know, wanted to make sure he had that 5 seconds plus insurance in his back pocket, because I noticed at one point that like the gap that came up on the screen was precisely 5 seconds. And I'm just like, oh, this would make it spicy right now. If the race ends and that gap is exactly 5 seconds, I know that would drive people crazy because they're going to go down probably like the whole season and, you know, final classifications and things like that. But, you know, kudos to Perez, because that was something else there. But let's take a look now at where some of the other drivers finished. I'll just pull up the final classification. So we had a podium of Sergio Perez, Charles Leclerc, and Carlos Sainz. Even though it was another Red Bull victory, glad to see that Ferrari kept them honest, even though, like I say, that Sergio really disappeared down the track at the end there. Wasn't an easy win for him. I mean, it was not an easy car to drive. The conditions weren't easy, and they had Charles hounding him as well. So very impressive. Then, like I say, good to see Ferrari back to podium. Sainz was kind of one of those guys that kind of ran his own race, as did Lando and as did Danny Ricciardo. Fourth and fifth for McLaren, really impressive there. They have Lance Stroll for the first of the Aston Martins in sixth. Max Verstappen finishes up in P7, just pipping Sebastian Vettel in the second Aston Martin. I really wanted Seb to stay in front of Max there, but you could just tell that Max was fighting for each and every point that he could get. But still, good to see double points finish for both the Astons. They get Lewis in ninth, which was artificially low for him because he had that off there and put it into the Tech Pro. And then rounding out the top 10 was Pierre Gasly, another guy that had a fairly quiet evening. I mean, there was a lot of guys that had offs, but most of the guys that finished in the top 10 had very quiet races. Pierre was one, Vettel was another one, Lance was another one, Lando we saw a fair bit during the race. But talk about redemption for Danny Ricciardo. We talked at the top of the show what a disappointment and what a frustration it must have been for him. Of course, like as you so correctly pointed out, he didn't have the same package of upgrades that Lando had. But still, I think if you're Danny Rick, I think you're going home with your chest puffed out, your head up a little bit. I think you got to be pretty happy with that that P5 by the end of the day.
Yeah, he hasn't had a top five, I don't think, since Saudi Arabia 2021. So almost a year.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, his best, so he had a P6 in Oz, and then the only other points finishes, he had a P8 in Azerbaijan, 2 ninths in Austria and France. And then a Hungary and Belgium, he was 15th, 17th in Holland, retired at Monza. So it's it's been a little bit difficult. And then a lot of finishes outside of the points all year long. Mm-hmm. So good for him.
Yeah,
because I mean, really it's been a rough season for the guy. And, you know, this is potentially a guy that might not have a seat come next year. So who knows? I mean, this story probably hasn't been finished, but every day that passes, it looks increasingly likely that he won't have a race seat for 2023. God, I was almost going to say 2022 here. This year's going too fast, but that's another story. So the way that it's setting things up, just run down the Drivers' Championship. Max Verstappen, 341. Charles Leclerc, 237. Sergio Perez, 235. Now that battle between Perez and Leclerc is getting a little bit spicy. Only 2 points between the two of them. Then you got George Russell, didn't score any points today. He had a bit of a rough day. He's on 203. Carlos Sainz, 202. I mean, these positions in the world championship from second down to fifth, I mean, this is going to change. I mean, the question is, who's going to end up where as we go in through these last five races? And then you have Lewis Hamilton, 170, Lando with 100, and then Esteban Ocon, Fernando Alonso, and Valtteri Bottas rounding out the top 10. Then a constructor side, you got Red Bull, 576, Ferrari, 439, Mercedes with 373, McLaren with 129, and then Alpine with 125. So I know it's for fourth and fifth in the constructors, but that could be a bit of an interesting tussle between Alpine and McLaren down the last five or six races of the year. Five, right? I think we got five left. So,
yep.
So there you go. But just going back to the final race classification, obviously we had half a dozen retirements, but just out of the guys that finished, who were some of the other standout stories from Sunday evening?
I really thought that that Lance was, you know, spectacular. He was great. I mean, there are there was a lot with his race that depended on his shoulders, like just depended on him making sure that he executed his race to the best of his ability, because the team kind of left it in his hands at the start, saying pretty much, hey, like, the conditions are tricky, and these are the tires that we got, and you got to make do with what we have. And I felt that he did a nice job of managing all of that, and it could have gone so many different ways for him and for the team, but he stayed out of trouble. He didn't make any mistakes. He was fast. He was quicker than Seb, and got his best finish of the season. The team as a whole has really started to come into its own here. You know, I was speaking with Mike Crack on Sunday following the race, and it's just interesting to hear him talk about, well, when they brought the big upgrade to the car in Spain, they didn't really know what they actually had, and that took a few races to figure out. And then they started to bring parts to it to see, okay, well, does this work with what we have or doesn't it? By the time they got to France and seeing some of the parts that they were adding and subtracting, they were seeing like, okay, when this is on, this works, when this is on, this doesn't work, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then that gave them a clearer path of development. And ever since, they have nailed their development ever since. And if you take a look at the team from where they started, which was like almost dead last, I believe, in Bahrain, like they were at the back, to where they are now, you know, they had a Q3 car. They had two Q3 cars on Saturday, which is something they struggled with at the beginning of the season and in the middle of the season, was qualifying and just trying to get into Q2 and then just trying to get into Q3. And now they're at the stage where, okay, they can get this car into Q3 consistently, you know, if the driver's not making mistakes, obviously. But tricky conditions aside, you know, both him and Vettel did a great job. I mean, Sebastian made up, I think it was like 4 or 5 spots right off the start.
And fantastic.
Dynamite. That changes his race. Boom. He doesn't do that, he's not finishing in the points, man. Like, that's just the way it goes. Or he's not finishing as high as he did in the points. So there are little things like that that the drivers, you know, really brought to the table on Sunday. And I think for this team, it's moving forward, trying to keep the spend on the car, trying to keep that a little bit lower moving forward, because they've spent a lot of money on it, just so they could get to where they are and close the gap and try to be one of the fastest teams in the midfield, which they are getting to, and setting themselves up. And the goal is to make a big jump in the off season to the top 3, top 4, top 5. That's the goal, is trying to break into that. And I think they can do it. I mean, the management that Mike Crack has done with Aston Martin, considering he's like parachuted into this thing at the beginning of the year, and that's not
like
an
6
easy,
months ago, right?
It's not an easy job, right, Daly? Just to get dumped in at the last minute, so to speak, and you're like, okay, yeah, you're now in charge of all of this. It's like, I've never done this before, right? So I think he's done a really nice job of like keeping the team focused, for sure, but keeping them on the development path that has them saying, okay, does this work? Does this not work? And nailing that, just absolutely nailing that every time out. And that is what is going to get them higher up in the championship sooner. I mean, obviously they feel like they're not going to be within podium battles until like 2024, 2025, but they're still trying to make sure that they're on a development curve. But by the time they get to 2023, like, they're competing into that, you know, top 3, top 4, top 5 sort of position in the constructor standings.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you think about Aston Martin, especially over the course of this year and last year. It's at times been a bit of from the outside, at least, and I'm sure, you know, for the people inside the team, it probably would echo the sentiment to one degree or another, that it's been a slow and at times frustrating development arc to watch, where it's been like two steps forward but like one and a half steps or one and three quarter steps back. But I mean, as you pointed out, I mean, they are we're starting to see signs of it now that they're what they're doing is working. And of course, you know, there's the whole spend on it. But I mean, not only are they developing this car, they're developing this entire organization. Remember, this organization used to be Racing Point, which used to be Force India, which literally came out of a factory that's probably no bigger than my house. I mean, I'm exaggerating. They're building this new state-of-the-art facility at Silverstone, which is going to be the Aston Martin equivalent of the MTC,
tunnel.
Right? No wind tunnel.
They don't have their own wind tunnel yet.
Yeah, I mean, before they were Aston Martin, before Lawrence Stroll came in and invested this vast fortune with his partners, with this consortium that he's headed, I mean, this was a team that consistently punched above their weight with literally nothing. But now they're leveling up, and there's going to be setbacks, there's going to be hiccups along the way, but you know, if they keep developing and if you keep bringing in the right people and keep working forward, then you know, you would hope and you would like to think at some point they're going to get this thing right. But today on Sunday, great result for them. And it was funny too, you know, just talking about, you know, Lance's race. It was very interesting to watch him at the beginning of the race because, as I said to my wife, Lance is driving this car very delicately. And you could tell that, you know, he was not risking the car more than he wanted to. And sure, he was being conservative, but you just got to, like, I'm trying to put myself into Lance's headspace inside the car thinking, you know, I'm going to be in this car for 2 hours, 61 laps, whatever comes first. I'm playing the long game. So if these guys want to go bananas in lap one and put themselves into the tire barrier, you know, better luck to them.
Yeah, anyways, go ahead. One of the other things with Lance, you know, he gets a lot of crap on social media, obviously, but his qualifying performances and how he's stacked up against Sebastian Vettel this season, He's done a really good job. And, you know, there are some points where he's been a lot faster than Seb has this season. And I mean, like, look, I mean, Seb's no slouch. Like, you know, I rate Vettel very high, very high. And, you know, Lance has been keeping pace with him and sometimes much faster than him. I think Fernando is going to be another benchmark that Lance is going to have to hit. I think Fernando is going to be that driver that's going to either push him to going to push Lance to another level to get to another level, or is the opposite. So I think that's a smart move by Aston Martin. It's a smart move by Lawrence Stroll to go and get, you know, Fernando, because he's also not only going to push Lance, he's going to push his team. Because if we take a look at Alpine, and I would really like to talk to about Alpine really quickly.
Sure.
Because, again, they've kind of done similar things where it's like they've been developing their car throughout the season. They haven't stopped developing the car. They brought a brand new floor for their car for this weekend at Singapore. Fernando seems to be happy with it. He thinks that they're getting the right data off of it. He has pushed that team so hard in terms of getting what he wants, getting what the car needs onto the car as fast as possible. And I think that's another one of those things that Fernando's going to bring to Aston Martin. He's not a patient driver and he will push them. And I think that's going to be huge. That's going to take even the team to that next sort of level.
You know, if you're Lance, I mean, you must be thinking when you get like teammates like first Seb and then Fernando coming in. At first, you must be thinking, "Oh crap!" But at the same time, you must be thinking, "Oh man, this is awesome too."
But that's why you're in Formula One. You race exactly against the best, and you got to beat the best, man. And that's why you're there.
100%. Okay, I just want to finish the race recap here on a couple of quotes. First comes from Will Buxton, who said, quote, "What's the point of having wet tires if the wet race starts are always delayed by the FIA until the track is so dry that you don't need to use them," end quote. And the second one is a quote from motorsport.com. This is Lando, who told Sky Sports, quote, This was by far the hardest race probably of my career, not because I had to hold off too many people, but just the level of concentration you need from lap one to the very end is incredible, end quote. So two good points from Will and from Lando, so we'll just leave it there. We wanted to talk now about the cost cap. I'm going to just read another quote here from Karun Chandok, and Karun has to say, quote, "The cost cap row is very important for the FIA and can't be underestimated. If RBR are correct, Red Bull are correct, the other teams will expect a clear explanation that doesn't undermine the system. If guilty, the penalty will set the precedent and will determine how much of a risk teams will take," end quote. Now, this sort of adds on to a quote from Toto Wolff, who said it's an open secret that that one Formula One team has massively broken the cost cap. So now I will zip it and I'll let you take it from here, Tim. You want a piece of this?
Okay, so... well, I mean, let's nice take a look subtle. At it. Yeah, well, let's... I mean, maybe not a ton of people are up on this story, so let's kind of... Let's kind of slide into this thing nice and easy so we can get everybody up to speed on everything that's going on. If we look at it, if you go all the way back to 2021, Formula One introduced first ever cost cap. And by March, teams were filing their financial forms that had to do with how much spend they made during the 2021 season. So it's kind of like filing your taxes at your year end. Formula One brought this cost cap in for a number of different reasons. It's very, and I said this on SportsCenter, it is very important that Formula One did this, and it's very important for Formula One that they did it. And the amount of hours that, you know, Chase Carey spent just getting these teams into a room just to talk about a cost cap and what that guy had to go through to get everybody to agree to a cost cap and to sign off on it, because
in the middle of a pandemic, nonetheless,
we have been watching Formula One, where teams just spend, dude. Just spent. They literally are saving these teams from themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They are helping the competition get closer, which offers a better viewing experience for the people at home watching on TV or in the grandstands who pay good money to come to the races. But they're also helping these teams generate revenue for themselves. And some teams, at the end of every season, they don't actually make money. They either will lose money or they break even. That's not a sport. You know, it's not owning something, right? You need to be making money.
It's not the point of business in general, right? You go into business, any line, you go into business to make a profit, right?
100%.
To make money, yeah.
100%. So the cost cap comes in, and, you know, it's rumored that there are two teams that have... gone over the 2021 cost cap. It's being speculated that it's Aston Martin and Red Bull. And it's being speculated that Aston Martin is in what's called a minor breach. So it would be overspending the cap. I believe it was about 145 million. For 2021, but it's less than 5% of going over. So that's a minor overspend. And there is a major overspend of more than 5%, which is called material. So the material penalties, and they range from quite a few, there is a laundry list of them. There's a deduction of drivers and constructors championship points. There's suspension from one or more stages of a competition, suspension from an entire competition. So potentially of the year that the spend that you went over in happened, exclusion from that championship and reduction of the cost cap for that team. So I'm assuming with that one, that has to do with years coming up. That's what I assume from that. Now, it is, again, you know, being theorized that that's Red Bull.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard from Christian Horner on Saturday, and he is adamant that they haven't done anything wrong and that they have adhered to the cost cap. But if you listen to some of the other team principals, like Toto Wolff, and we heard him on Sky Sports, actually, you know, he believes otherwise, and he feels that they have gone over. And hearing more from Christian on the Saturday, you know, extremely upset that, obviously he's sticking to his side, but the fact that what Toto was saying, you know, that's not being said to him. So there's a bit of a miscommunication there. And obviously this is Formula One and it's the paddock and everybody talks and there's rumors and the rumors spread fast. But I think it's important, and listening to a lot of the teams, they're really serious about it, Daly. Like it's to the point where it's like, why bother having a cost cap if you go over? And if you do go over, and let's say there is a team, and we should know more by Wednesday, that teams get their certificates. And if a team does go over, and the penalty that is issued is not really that harsh, then what's stopping everyone else from just blowing past that cost cap? And I'm not going to say everyone else, because there's not a lot of other teams that can even spend up to the cost cap.
Well, right? That's you've the got, other thing, right?
Yeah, you've got your bigger teams who can spend up to that cost cap, but then you've got your other teams like the Williams, the Haas. They can't spend up to that. They can't get to that $145 million or $140 million for 2022. So listening to the teams, a lot of them feel that, you know, these the punishments that are on the table, and there are quite a few, this thing has some teeth. And they leave it in the hands of the new president for the FIA, Mohamed Bensoulaym. And I think he, for himself being that new president, I think this is the time where if there is a team that has gone over, I think this is the time where he has to throw the book at somebody. And I think what you have to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's basically like the freshly minted brand new president of the FIA. So this is going to be a statement about what he stands for as president. And, you know, if he comes off too light, you know, he'll be seen as a bit of a, you know, too lenient. If he throws the book at whoever, then, you know, maybe he's going to be seen as really harsh. So there's some big decisions to be made.
But I think it's that, right? I think the rules need to have teeth. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be something that you're not going to push up against. It's got to be something that really scares the team to even get close to it. Because as soon as, like, this thing doesn't have any teeth to it, teams are just going to keep pushing that line. They're going to keep pushing up to it. And they're going to keep going over. And they're going to find ways of, like, getting around certain spends on certain things. So I really think that this is very significant, and that if this has happened, and we're not saying that it has, but if it has happened, that there needs to be an example made.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because when you hear the comments by Toto, and he's just, he basically said, quote, "As a matter of fact, all of us have been investigated diligently. And as far as we understand, there's a team in minor breach, which is more procedural, and another team that is fundamentally massively over, and that is still being looked after. So that's an open secret in the paddock," end quote. So, I mean, he hasn't come out and specifically said Red Bull, but, you know, like you say, I mean, it's rumored to be alleged to be Red Bull and Aston Martin. But I guess there's kind of like the knock-on effect too. It's like, if you spend more and you have all those resources that you're putting that you're using that money for, right, to the development, I mean, there's kind of like a snowball knock-on effect from 1 year into another to another, right?
Yeah, and so that's what I think some folks, fans, are kind of getting lost on. So if a breach has been made in the cost cap in 2021 and the certificates don't get issued until 2022, so then what happens to the 2021 season? you know, do you go back and undo all of that? Or is this more something that affects the future? And so, again, you know, listening and hearing from a lot of the teams over the weekend, a lot of them feel that, you know, if you're overspending in 2021, if you're going over the cap in 2021, that money actually is translating into 2022 and 2023. That's where that money is starting to go. It's getting funneled that way because you're going into development of that. So 5%, I think it was around $7 million. Mm-hmm. $7 million, again, listening to some of the teams, it sounds like it equates to about 2 to 3 tenths worth of lap time, because you can basically hire more engineers as well, right? You can hire more engineers. They can work more hours. They can figure out more ways of generating more performance from the race car. And you're not talking about that current race car. They're talking about the cars that are going to be happening in the next 6 months, the next 12 months, the next 24 months. And that's kind of like where your development curve goes, right? And so, you know, that's what a lot of the teams are having the issues with, because it's performance that affects the future. It's not performance that affects the current or the past. It's performance that's in the future. And that's basically, I think, where a lot of the team's concerns are.
Because yeah,
it's going to cost them a ton of money to close that gap, right?
Yeah, yeah, great point. I mean, the money you spend today isn't going to affect the car today. It's going to affect the car tomorrow down the road somewhere.
Yes.
But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you've got Toto saying some pretty inflammatory things, you know, kind of. He's not out and out saying it, but, you know, he's kind of like leading you in a certain direction. Christian Horner has said that those, you know, accusations are hugely defamatory and fictitious. He's threatened to sue Toto and Mercedes, so who knows if that makes them back off. They seem pretty confident. Max being Max, you know, when he was asked about it, he had to say, quote, "I know where the speculation comes from, so for me it's okay. When I hear it from the team, yes, I'm confident. Of course, then the other teams start to talk about it when they had no information. I find that a bit silly, so just keep your mouth shut." So Max, tell us what you really think. You know, but it's interesting. It could potentially be a big week of news. So we'll just have to keep following this story and see how it breaks once more comes to light. But a hugely important moment in time for Formula One, and also for Mohamed Bin Sulayem, the FIA president, to kind of underline things. But yeah, interesting. And of course, you know, we should end the show here with a bit of a lighter note, because you shared a really funny tweet in our group chat, and there was some Photoshop of the Spice Girls and Jerry Halliwell, Ginger Spice. I just Googled this.
Hold on a second. But before you get into the full tweet, I am not the one who created the tweet.
Oh, yeah. No, I was going to point that out. I was going to say that was your one. I just said that you, I sort of said that you shared a tweet that you found, but you shared a tweet that you found, but it was funny because, you know, Jerry Halliwell, who's Ginger Spice, it was Christian Horner's wife, has been replaced by Christian with the nickname Spendy Spice. So I thought that was, you know, quite, you know, amusing. I'm sure Christian probably doesn't, but some people obviously have the time and the sense of humor to do these things. But obviously...
I think F1 memes are probably some of the funniest stuff out there.
They've been getting, like, some of them are so good. They're so,
so
good.
Creative.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I could spend an hour looking at some of them, man.
Oh, yeah. So that was really good. That made me LOL. Let's just put it that way. To use the appropriate lingo. Hey, but Tim, this was awesome, man. Thanks again for doing this. So as we wrap it up, just remind everyone where they can find you online, where they can find the TS Racing Pod, all that good stuff.
Yeah, if you want to listen to more TSN Racing Pod, you can get it wherever you get your podcasts. Please head on over to Spotify, give us a 5-star rating and a follow, and the same over on Apple Podcasts. Write a review, give us a rating, subscribe. It helps us a lot, helps us grow the pod. If you want more from me, you can get me at Tim Haraney on all forms of social media. But yeah, daily, like always, this is a good time.
Yeah, and we get to do it five more times. Japan coming yes, up next sir. Week, which is always one of my favorite circuits to watch. Yes, my wife asked me today, she said, "You, if you could pick one race to go to next year, where would you go?" I said Japan.
Japan, yeah.
Basically, yeah. I'd love to go to Suzuka. I mean, I have it burned in my memory, that 1988 Japanese Grand Prix that I watched as a kid, Senna and Prost going into the chicane just before the pit entrance there and tangling up there. That was, we all talk about some of the moments between Max and Lewis last year, but Senna and Prost, they had a pretty nasty relationship too, so that was an iconic moment. Anyways, for myself, you can find myself, Mr. Mark Hamilton. We're the Scuderia F1 podcast. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, etc. We'll be back on Thursday. Tim will be back with more TSN Racing Pod this week, and of course we will be back together next weekend to do a mashup after the Japanese Grand Prix. And until then, guys, thanks very much. Enjoy the week, and we'll be back to racing again before you know it. So bye for now.